Hello, Internet. Welcome to episode 52 of the Assorted Calibers podcast. The Second Amendment podcast is a little bit for everyone. I'm Weird Beard, and with me, as always, is my wonderful and very patient hostess, Aaron Paulette. How you doing, Aaron?
Well, Zulily is really trying to mug the hell out of my bank account, and I am doing my best to withstand it.
Let's hope the recording doesn't go late and Aaron doesn't help herself to a couple extra glasses of rum, because she might wake up with a whole bunch of boxes of pretty stuff and a whole little wallet.
Yeah. So for people who don't know, Zulily is an online storefront, kind of. I'm not really sure how to describe it. Well, you have to join, you know, so you register. It doesn't cost any money. And they have clothing sales, and they sell really nice stuff for, like, ridiculously low prices, like 50% off or more. And I found a couple of brands that look really good on me, and they fit me. And those two right there are rare. And then it's like, oh, wow, look at how little they are. And it's not like, you know, $5 or anything. Oh, my God, that'd be fantastic. But, you know, it's, you know, things that cost, like, you know, 20, 30, 40, you know, way up there. It's like, you know, 12, 15, 20. It's like, oh, my God. And it's all based on trying to get you to freak out, because it's a limited time. You know, we only have so many, and when they're gone, so get them now, get them now, get them now, 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 now.
Don't think about it, just push by.
Yes, exactly. And you know, I've bought the things. They're really nice, they're good quality, they feel great on me. And it's, I just, you know, and I had bought some stuff with my little mad money, my disposable income. It's like, okay, fine. And then, ping, in my inbox, oh, look, we're having a sale on this particular brand with the cute floral skirts. It's like, you assholes, that's my kryptonite. And I'm trying to resist my buy all the things.
And of course, you've got that magical thing of the, you know, $20, that's not that much money. You know, $15, that's not that much money. But I can think of the line from the Kevin Costner film For Love of the Game, where John C. Reilly walks into Kevin Costner's room and finds that he has raided the mini bar. And he goes, you know, a whole bunch of little bottles does eventually equal one big bottle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I have sitting in my shopping cart at least $300 worth of stuff. And of course, I can't afford that. So here's my tactic, quotation marks. I go through them and I find the ones in my size and, oh, that's pretty, that's pretty, that's pretty. And I put them all in the shopping cart. And then I look at the total and I'm aghast. And then I go away for, like, days, because, you know, the event lasts, like, I don't know, 72 hours or maybe even sometimes 5 days. And I wait until the last minute. How do I know it's the last minute? Oh, they will send me reminders. You've still got this thing in your shopping cart. Don't you want to get it before it's gone? And I wait until, like, the last day, assuming I have any money at all. And then I see what all's left, because by that point, The locusts have come in, they have cleared things out, and hopefully that will reduce my choices enough that it's not like, I can't deal with this, and then, okay, there's like three left, I can get those. Or, well, they took the ones I really liked, so I can just close out of that. Or, oh, there's only one, and, you know, that sort of thing. That's how I cope with this. Mm-hmm. But It's mugging me. Okay, for people who don't give a darn about clothes, if you're a gamer and you know about the Steam sale and the whole joke about how there's the cartoon of Gabe, you know, kicking down the door and the wallet saying, no, no, not again. Yeah, that's how I feel, just with cute clothes instead of games. So, more than you wanted to know about me, I'm certain, but I like to share. What are you doing, Weird?
I'm having a gimlet, and okay. It's very good. And I got to talk about this gimlet, because let me tell you, I might have hit a stroke of genius. Is I am using Caledonia Spirits from Vermont's barrel aged Tomcat Gin that is also made with honey, and it is a very, very good, rich, delicious gin. And some syrup that I made with using lime peels, and a couple of dashes of cardamom bitters. And it is so good.
Okay. I'm glad that it's tasty and you're enjoying it.
I think this might even be a drink that Aaron would love, because it is not, the Tomcat gin is not overly ginny of gin gin, tastes like Pine Trees gin.
Did you just say ginny gin gin?
I sure did.
Oh, okay, then. You do you, baby.
I do me.
Shh, we can't talk about that. This is a family show.
Yeah, no, it's I'm having a good day. My daughter's had a rough week. She's been just super duper grouchy. Don't really know what the deal is. I'm kind of wondering if she's just kind of going through a developmental phase where, you know, kids do that. They're comfortable, and then they get really frustrated with the world. And so we've been dealing with helping her deal with her frustration, and I think we made some inroads, because today was a good day. So yeah, I'm having a good day now. Oh gosh, Aaron, you just put a picture in chat. That's hilarious.
Yeah, that's the cartoon I was trying to explain.
Yeah,
we'll put it in the show notes. But yeah, just replace Steam with Zulily. That's exactly what's going on with me.
Yeah, essentially, yeah, you've got a daddy walking in with his belt in his hand, and except for his head has been replaced by the Steam logo, and there's a kid laying on the floor, looking,
which looks like a wallet.
Yeah, but he's got a wallet placed over him, and so yeah, daddy's Steam's gonna take the belt to the old wallet.
Uh huh.
Oh, and Oddball's in chat, and he says you're not wrong.
Okay, well, there's one thing I want to say, and this isn't even really a topic. This is just sort of glossing over. Weird, you and I, we are thoroughly sick of talking about what's going on with the NRA.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing is, there have been more developments, and I don't want to talk about them. But for anyone who wants to know what's going on, I'm going to refer you once again to the blog of my friend John Richardson, his blog, No Lawyers, Only Guns and Money, and he has been detailing this dumpster fire train wreck as more information comes to light, and there's been a document dump, and there are at least two letters from the Finance Committee directed to Wayne LaPierre that essentially translate to, what the hell, dude? And so we're tired of talking about it, but he's there. There's this document dump. Go see for yourself. So check him out. He's doing good work.
This is going to be make the Nashville NRA annual meeting probably that much more exciting, I think.
So speaking of things that we are tired of talking about, I am so over talking about the New Zealand gun ban. But unfortunately for me, Weird isn't. So sit back and brace yourselves, or maybe relax and enjoy yourselves, whatever. I don't kink shame, for Weird's third and thankfully final Kiwi Fisk.
Okay, here's the final week of me fisking Jacinda Ardern of New Zealand and her massive new gun ban. The first fisk was Ms. Ardern talking about the broad points of the ban. The second was some of the finer points, as well as her goals to put even more restrictions on the gun owners of New Zealand. Now we'll be hearing from the Minister of Police, Stuart Nash.
It is an interim step until legislation can be introduced and passed to ban all military-style semi-automatics. These measures will make a real difference to enable New Zealand to become a safer place.
As I pointed out before, similar bans in other countries like the UK and Australia did not see a drop in crime. And the drop that happened after Australia's sweeping gun ban was also enjoyed by New Zealand, who had no such restrictions. The claim that gun bans promote public safety is simply a myth, and the propagation of this myth costs good people their freedom as well as their lives.
Police are gearing up to enable these weapons to be taken out of circulation. They'll be supported by the New Zealand Defence Force to enable safe storage, transport, and destruction of assault rifles and MSSAs.
Also, as I said before, it's really painful to hear that New Zealand is going to have these sweeping bans for no gain in safety, and likely a loss. But also, this ban will end up costing the country hundreds of millions of dollars in compensation and police action. And in the end, they aren't even going to attempt to regain some of that capital by selling the guns to countries that still enjoy the right or privilege to keep such arms. On March 15th, a monster used guns to murder 50 innocent people, and New Zealand will now execute the guns and keep the monster alive, because that makes perfect sense.
Finally, I want to remind that it is a privilege and not a right to own a firearm in New Zealand.
He needs to make that clear, just in case any Kiwis get listening to us uppity Yanks in the United States. We must always cherish our right to keep and bear arms, and know and understand that that right is to defend human life from enemies, foreign and domestic. While we may enjoy hunting, shooting, competition, or even collecting, those are always secondary for why our founding fathers recognized this right to keep and bear arms as a fundamental human right. Human right, as in the right extends to all the people of the world. The government of New Zealand and their Empress Queen Elizabeth might not agree with me.
We know that there are many gun owners with legitimate reasons for owning firearms, especially in our rural and provincial communities. This work is not directed at them.
Not directed at you yet. Note, these politicians keep saying that the ever-overreaching restrictions are not going far enough. How much longer before they come for the hunters and the farmers? If sports shooting and killing pests is your only reason for owning guns, you won't have much to say when they turn on you.
Our focus is on ensuring the immediate safety and peace of mind of our communities.
Except bans of these sorts have never seen a drop in crime. Furthermore, you are giving into one of the goals of the monster who did the killing. Do you think doing exactly what he wanted will get you less terrorists or more? Now on to some questions from the press.
Why is it taking so long, Prime Minister, for politicians to react to this debate that's been going on now for 25 years?
Yeah, and there have been repeat attempts, and that's clear in some of the dates that I've shared with you. But I think what's important now is that New Zealand public is galvanised, and I would hope that politicians are galvanised behind these changes.
Again, it has always been their goal to ban guns. Just now they've got a tragedy to exploit.
There is more to be done. In Tranche 2, we'll look at issues around licensing, issues around registration, issues around storage. There are a range of other amendments that we believe do need to be made, and that will be the second tranche of reforms yet to come.
This isn't enough. Do you think they will ever stop? This also goes for gun owners here in America. New Zealand was more restrictive than the most restrictive states in America, and now they're going much further with no end in sight. Do you think our anti-gun politicians will ever be happy? Just look at the UK. They banned guns. Then they banned knives. Now they're sending tradesmen to jail when they find screwdrivers in their tool belt.
We are really trying to target here those who seek firearms for illegitimate use, seek them for crime and to cause harm, whilst of course acknowledging that particularly in our rural communities, we do have legitimate use.
And self-defense is not a legitimate use for a gun. Also, like all other gun laws, they do not affect criminals because criminals don't follow the law. And guns are a means to an end, and that end is crime. So what do they care if their gun isn't in compliance when they're mugging, raping, or robbing? The killer in New Zealand bought the magazines he used illegally. But what did he care? He was about to murder 50 innocent people while they gathered to worship. The gun violations amount to nothing to him. And as I said before, he wanted to sow political strife and push for more gun control. So in the end, he won.
What we're essentially doing is removing the ammunition that is used and the weapons that we simply should not be allowing access to in New Zealand, or should not be allowing access to in order to modify any other gun.
Of course, ignoring the tube-fed shotguns he used to murder several people, because that would probably upset too many legitimate gun owners. But don't worry, with the Overton window moved, pretty soon the anti-gunners could single out those gun owners and come after them later. Remember, they are constantly saying they aren't done yet with these restrictions. I would advise all to believe them.
The police do have the ability to go into any licensed dealer and ask for records. They will be doing that and check them off against those who have bought these types of weapons.
Remember, this is when any gun violence prevention advocate points out that in the various universal background checks bills, there's wording that prohibits the National Registry. It sure does, but does that stop the authorities from going to the shops and figure out who owns what? Or simply looking at manufacturing and import paperwork and just following the paper trail to your door? All the media coverage of our own spree killers shows that the authorities know everything about the guns used in the crime, because any sale through an FFL can be considered registered.
And I think it is important to keep in mind that if someone has a weapon that we are not banning today that they wish to return, they can do so, and an amnesty applies.
Just because they haven't confiscated all the guns yet, it doesn't mean that they won't accept your unconditional surrender today.
We do want to encourage that users of guns that they have no use for anymore, even if they can't determine its origin or hold it, and even if they don't hold a license, we encourage them to bring them into the police. We just ask that they contact the police before doing so.
I guess the amnesty is nice in case you somehow acquired something through less than legal channels. This doesn't sound like the no questions asked used in our gun buybacks, where I wouldn't be surprised if criminals weren't fencing stolen guns to the police. Also, I might note, throughout this press conference, they repeatedly tell people to make an appointment first with the police, and then come and have their guns confiscated. They say this like someone showing up unannounced with a firearm is going to get shot on sight. What gives? You could go to your local police station right now in the United States and turn in your guns with no problem. But I guess the Kiwis have their hands full.
Yeah, again, obviously it's an application process, and we will be banning these in law in 3 weeks' time. So there is essentially no point in applying. You can imagine that the police might have other priorities in that three-week period than processing such applications.
So yeah, they're going to put new applications on the back burner too. Jeez, that sounds like Massachusetts.
We of course need to be mindful of guns that are not legal in New Zealand. We're of course already mindful of that.
And these sweeping changes do nothing to this. Gun control laws only affect the law abiding.
The issue of registration, more broadly speaking, I would categorize as one of the issues we're looking at. I really am seeking that advice from police. What will make the biggest difference to you? And giving them ample opportunity to give us advice on issues of registration.
And why do they want registration? Would that have stopped this crime? Would it make it easier to track down those previously mentioned black market guns? No. They want registration so they can round up all the guns with much more ease. When I say registration leads to confiscation, this is not outlining a side effect of the law. This is the reason for the law. Police do not use registration to solve crimes. Criminals do not register their guns. Registrations are worthless for anything besides rounding up the guns and locking up owners who don't turn in guns when asked to. So my condolence to the people of New Zealand. Those are your anti-gun talking points and a few rebuttals to combat them. Okay, Aaron, you can unplug your ears now. We're through. That's the last of that horrible press conference.
Oh, you know, I think in the future, I would rather you just do it all at once, just rip the Band-Aid off, rather than just the little. Stay tuned for part 12 of Weird's excruciatingly detailed audio fisk.
Oh, Aaron, you don't even know. I'm looking at my fisk folder right now. I've got a magical folder on my computer that's called the fisk folder. And I have a folder that has 114 cuts in it.
Why do you hate me?
Don't worry. I've got other stuff to do. And I need to contact some of the people I met at NRAM and see if we can get some interviews thrown in there, too.
We should probably have some sort of reaction to this particular segment other than just thank God it's over.
Well, I gotta say, the one that I, again, super duper takeaway again, and I think the big reason why it's important to cover these stories from other countries as well, is the whole, when the secretary came in and talked about, like, you know, don't get your minds that this is you have a right to own these guns. This is a privilege. And it's one of those, it kind of said the fact that he just came out. This is not part of the questions. This was not anything like that. This is one of those things of the, I've got to throw this out on the table. This needs to be discussed right now. So it sounds like our Yankee propaganda is filtering all over the globe, and so much that they need to wash it off because it burns.
I thought it was interesting that one of them, and I think it was the Prime Minister, made a special point of saying, don't even apply. I mean, yes, you technically could, but, you know, we're planning on making it illegal anyway, so don't even try to get in on the last bit. You'll just slow things down, and it'll just be denied anyway, so, you know, don't even bother.
Yep, and of course, again, I gotta reiterate, as far as I know, I don't know the New Zealand penal system very well. I'm much more familiar with the British one, which I'm sure this is very deeply based on, especially given that they still are under the rule of the Queen there. So,
well, as opposed to Australia, which is the British penal system.
Yeah.
But a bump. Heyo!
We'll be here all night, folks. these are the jokes. But as a general rule, like, I know I've seen instances like this in England where, oh yeah, no, this dude's not super old. There's a good chance he will be, I don't know if they have parole there, but he will be let out of prison at some point if he plays his cards right. And so, yeah, they're going to lock up the monster that did this. He's not even a person. Like, just read the manifesto. This is not a human being. This is a broken, horrible monster that's packed into a man's skin. And they're going to lock him up and give him 3 hots and a cot, and then probably eventually let him go if he doesn't kill himself or somebody else kill him in prison or something like that. And yet they're going to execute all the guns. Like, these guns are going to be destroyed. We're not going to sell them. We're not going to get rid of them. We're not going to try to make ourselves some money. No, this is, they're all going to be destroyed because we can't let these guns survive this horrible attack. I mean, just so misguided. Ugh.
Mm-hmm.
So last week, Oddball's wife talked about him not only buying a terrible knife, but the terrible knife. But where does one go to get such substandard cutlery?
Welcome to Oddball's Corner Pocket. If you listened to episode 51, you probably heard my wife telling a story about me making one of my more questionable purchases. This was done in what we refer to as a Mall Ninja store. I have had to explain just what these stores are in the past, and I figured I would talk about them this week. To recap, a couple weeks ago, my wife and I decided that we needed a weekend getaway to Gatlinburg, Tennessee. For those that don't know, Gatlinburg and its neighbor Pigeon Forge are tourist towns in the Smoky Mountains near Knoxville. While there is easy access to the national park, the towns themselves have a lot of tourist traps, discount stores, etc. Generally, Pigeon Forge's tourist area is more neon lights, and you'll want to drive from spot to spot, and Gatlinburg's is more pedestrian-centric and tries to have more of an old-timey feel. For whatever reason, both of these areas have a ton of what can definitely be called Mall Ninja stores. In Pigeon Forge, these tend to be larger, standalone stores that have a decent amount of room. In Gatlinburg, they tend to be small shops that you have to go up or downstairs to get to, and are rather cramped. Me being the sick individual that I am, I actually kind of like the little places that you enter through a hole in the wall, go down some stairs, and walk into a small, cramped shop. These shops sell things that 13-year-old boys and stoners dream of. Super serious-looking knives that their moms won't let them have because they look dangerous, and their dads won't let them have because, well, they're crap. Airsoft guns, lighters with dragons and motorcycle logos on the sides, and next to them, incense burners, and, quote, tobacco pipes that, well, if you feel the need to actually label a pipe as being, quote, for tobacco use, it clearly isn't. I think my favorite example this year were the gas mask bongs in various colors. Link in the show notes if you're curious. Of course, I feel obligated to state that smoking marijuana is a federal crime that can strip you of your right to bear arms. Just say no to drugs, kids. Obviously, me being me, my eye is pretty much always drawn to the sharp, pointy things. The good news is that these places pretty much always have a wide selection. The bad news is that they're pretty much all terrible. There might be the odd low-end Gerber or Schrade, which you can find at Walmart for $20, but the vast majority are brands like MTech, Timberwolf, or TacForce. If you're not familiar with these brands, they are known for being not good. They use junk steel, and the designs are often best described as novelty knife. Anything ranging from the $5 super tactical knife for high-speed, low-drag operators that operate in operations operationally, to a mermaid knife. No, seriously. Link in the show notes. Oh, and of course, there are the balisongs that I would honestly be afraid that if anyone started flipping, a pivot pin would break and the knife blade would sail off. Out the front switchblades that might or might not work after a dozen uses. And everything is in colors ranging from black to fake titanium rainbow to gold. And this isn't even touching on the zombie hunter knives. But I'll get back to those in a minute. Along with the knives are other edged objects. While there are almost always throwing stars, darts, etc., there are also what are best described as weird works of art. Things that are called fantasy daggers, but couldn't possibly be used for, well, anything. I've seen one of these things in the shape of a scorpion with blades for legs, claws, stinger, and mouth. My only thought was, how do you hold that thing without slicing open something vital? Again, link in the show notes. Then there are the swords. There will always be swords and axes hanging on the walls. Oftentimes, there will be licensed movie replicas. These swords and axes are already where they should be, hanging on a wall. I will not disparage you if you buy one for display at your home. I have a number of wall hangers myself. Just please, for the love of God, do not try to actually use them. These swords often have a dangerous mix of cheap craftsmanship, bad steel, and yet surprisingly sharp edges. I've seen people doing forms with cheap wall hanger swords and have the sword literally fall apart in their hands while just cutting air. If you actually hit something solid, you risk the blade snapping. This can often lead to a sharpened piece of metal flying somewhere. At speed, possibly back at you. I'll throw a YouTube video proving my point in the show notes. Don't worry, it doesn't show any blood. So, I'm guessing you're wondering why I go into these shops, when I know that all they sell is crap. Honestly, it's something that I have asked myself. The truth is that my wife and I get a perverse sense of amusement out of these places. The more stupid and ridiculous things are, the better. Of course, she tends to get upset if I decide to bring any home with me. And I usually don't because, well, I'm usually carrying at least one quality knife that I spent $100 or more on. Why would I pay $20 for a knife that would probably break opening a letter? Especially when there are decent budget knives out there. On our trip this year, the inventories of most of the shops were a bit calmer than in the past. The big thing seemed to be knives, again in a wide assortment of colors, that sported Trump 2020 on them. While I was vaguely tempted to buy a gold out-the-front auto with that printed on it, I was pretty sure that my wife would stab me with it if I brought it home. I really didn't want to be that headline. Of course, you do know that I bought something. While my wonderful wife was busy at one of those panning for gold places, hey, she likes rocks, and I'm not in a position to judge, I slipped into a small ninja shop that we hadn't gone into yet. In that shop, they had a collection of Z-Hunter knives. If you're unfamiliar, these are a line of knives that are marketed as being perfect for the zombie apocalypse, or something. Remember that Dayglow Green that was popular for reasons a few years back? Yeah, that's all over these knives. They also tend to have skulls and zombie artwork all over them. Being a fan of Nick Shabazz, I told myself that I would buy a certain model in their line if I ever ran across it. This is the knife that he pulls out to demonstrate exactly what a terrible knife looks and acts like. While its blade is a fairly mundane black-coated, semi-serrated edge, the handle is full of skulls. Think of a bright neon green corn cob with the corn kernels replaced with angry skulls, and you'd be pretty close. And I've put a link in the show notes so that you can actually see it. Unfortunately, the ZB138GN has been discontinued. Anyways, as I was browsing this shop's wares, I noticed that there was a lot of this color green in one of the cases. On further inspection, this dealer had not one, not two, not three, but eight ZB138-GNs in his inventory. He even announced that they were on sale and he would knock a few dollars off. It was fate. I bought the knife and went to rejoin my wonderful, understanding wife.
I didn't know any of these things!
And, well, if you haven't already heard the rest of the story, listen to episode 51. If you ever find yourself in that area of the country and want to see some truly terrible stuff, I highly recommend checking these stores out. The experience is worth it. If, on the other hand, you're in that area and want a knife to slip in your pocket and actually use, yeah, head to the Smoky Mountain Knife Works in Sevierville, a couple miles from the interstate. Just understand that you may be there for a while. While they do have some crap, they also have a lot of the really good stuff. I hope you've enjoyed this segment. If you want to read more of my thoughts, I write at gunscarstech.com. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions for future segments, I can be reached at oddball@gunscarstech.com or give me a shout on the ACP Facebook page. Until next time, have a good one.
So what's funny is that for those of you who haven't met him, Oddball is tall. I mean, he's really tall. I don't know the numbers. He's at least 6'3". And he's the tallest out of all of my friends, who are also all pretty darn tall. And he's also fairly wide in the shoulder. Boy could have played football in high school is what I'm saying. And the thought of him sort of folding down to get into the little hole-in-the-wall shops is amusing to me.
Mm-hmm. Also, I gotta say, he's the show notes that he did. Oh, God. Yeah, you need to look through some of this hilarity of awful. And I may say specifically, may I direct you to the mermaid knife? I'm glad I have these show notes because I may end up looking at that again because it's like $11 on Amazon. Like, and it's so obnoxious. I kind of want one.
All right, well, I haven't seen those because I thought there was actually going to be a picture in the folder, and apparently it's just links. So I will follow the link and give you my online... Oh, that's horrible. Yeah, I'm looking at the gas mask bong. No, it's a water pipe. No, that yes. Actually says bong. Okay, that's
But just... it specifically says... No, for tobacco and shisha use. Yeah, absolutely.
That's just aesthetically horrible.
I've always wanted to go into a head shop. I mean, most of New England now has recreational marijuana legal, so now they just call them bongs. But back in the days when it was head shops, and like there were certain places where, like, I know there was one in Maine, there was one in the Old Port District of Portland where a buddy of mine actually said the word bong in it and then got told to leave immediately. Because, no, as soon as you suddenly talk about smoking the reefer, now suddenly the you're breaking the magic spell and now you gotta go. But yeah, no, these are not bogs. These are tobacco water pipes, sir. I would love just to load one up with a cherry pipe, with like cherry pipe tobacco and say, cool, take a big old hit off that. Let's see how you do.
Okay, am I a horrible person for thinking that the mermaid knife is actually pretty?
See, that's what I like. The fake titanium nitride coloring to it, and the mermaid stuff. Like,
I like the blue better because it's actually got a seascape on the blade. I mean, I don't think I would use it for anything, mainly because I wouldn't want to scratch it up. This is what I would consider to be a display knife. It's like, yeah, it's pretty. I wouldn't use it to cut more than, I don't know, an envelope.
See, the thing that I'm actually, the one thing that's keeping me from buying this horrible piece of garbage is the fact that I'd worry that my daughter would get her hands on it and it's horrible garbage and she might hurt herself with it substandard quality.
All right, so now let's look at the Scorpion Fantasy. What the hell is that?
Yeah, it's art.
That, how can you call that a deck? How do you even?
Yep. I think you got the point.
Okay. Yeah, that's, I wouldn't even call that a knife. That's like some sort of, it's, okay, it looks like a scorpion. It's made out of sharp pieces. That doesn't make it a knife, because you have to be able to wield a knife.
It's also like mounted on a plaque, too.
Yeah, so this is just very sharp art.
Mm-hmm. It might even be sharp. It might be art with the appearance of sharpness.
Oh, that's true. That's even worse. Oh, dear. All right. Oh, that's a YouTube video, The Cheap Katana Fail. I think we've all seen that one.
As he was talking about like crappy wall hanger swords, I'm like, oh yeah, we better be talking about that video. Have you not seen that one, Aaron?
I don't think I've seen it. Oh my god, yes, that one. The Home Shopping Network. Oh yeah. Yes. I shouldn't laugh at the poor guy because he's injured and bleeding, but I mean this was live and he taps the spine of the blade on the counter and it breaks and yeah.
That's just an important life lesson that he needed to learn right then and there.
Uh-huh. And then while this is going on, the camera is awkwardly but professionally panning over the product, and that guy goes off screen, and somebody else smoothly comes on screen and takes over.
Yeah, do not durability test cutlery that you can buy on the Home Shopping Network.
That actually reminds me of a story when Mike Rowe, one of his first jobs, was on QVC, and he was supposed to sell a product, and the way they did it, they basically just threw him into the deep end. It's like, here's this thing, sell it. And he had to talk about something he didn't know anything about for like 10, 15 minutes. And the first time he tried it, he fumbled his way through and it was really awkward, and I think he got by just because he was just sort of adorable in his ignorance. And when he got off the set, the producer or whoever's boss was just gave him that stern look that, you know, okay, that was your one chance. If you screw it up again, you're done. And this was before the internet, so he didn't have a way of Googling these things. And so he got on there and he looked at this thing and he flat out admitted, look, I don't know anything about this, but I know that there are people who watch the show who do. So how about you call in and you tell me about it? And the fact of the matter is that there were, at least at the time, if not still now, people who watch this just to see people fail. Because he was on like super late at night. Mm-hmm. And so these are the kinds of people, it's like, oh, let's watch the newbie screw up. And so he did that whole, hey, I don't know anything about it. You're watching, you call in, you tell me. And it worked. And people called in. It's like, oh, yes, I have one of these. And it's so fantastic. It does this, that, and the other. And Micro was just his normal, charming self. And he talked with her. And, oh, okay, that's, oh, I didn't know. And then there was a new product and something else. And that's actually how he did it. He admitted ignorance and just got through it that way. And I don't know how long he did it, but he had a brief career. It wasn't just he did it a few times and failed. He did it for, I don't know, 6 months, a year, something like that. And so just looking at that video is, I'm glad that wasn't him.
And he moved on to become Mike Rowe, and we didn't. So there's that.
He's a very nice, wholesome man. I like him.
Yeah, I love him. I like his TED Talks and other speeches like that are really good. Like, he does a lot of like motivational speaking, and he's talked at graduation. And I must say, as someone who was fed I wasn't fed anything because I wanted to be a scientist since I was teeny. So it really wasn't all that, you know, big a deal of the talking about go to college. But, oh man, the number of people I went to college with that were just at college because they were told that you really just need to go to college. And they just racked up so much debt for something that probably didn't pan out very well for them. Like, his whole statement of like bringing back love for the trades is awesome. Cause let me tell you, when my heating system breaks, like, I don't call a PhD, I call a tradesman. My car needs an oil change. I'm going to take it to my mechanic. Like, there is absolutely no shame in those careers. And I'm glad that Mike Rowe is putting some shame on the people who look down their nose at them.
Yeah. Especially since if you go to a trade school, you graduate with a degree you can use immediately and start making some really good money, as opposed to, I mean, I'm not trying to look down on college degrees. Some are very good and very useful. Some are, oh dear, you went into debt for that. Well, good luck. And so I like the way that he's pointing out that not all college degrees are good and necessary, mm-hmm. and that you can do just as well, if not better, with going to a trade school.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone who has listened to David's segments knows that he is a very educated individual. But that has led people to ask, well, where does he get all his information? In this segment of Gun Lovers and Other Strangers, David gives you a peek at one of his many bookshelves.
Hi, and welcome to Gun Lovers and Other Strangers. Over the years, I've had people ask me where I got some esoteric piece of technical firearms knowledge, or where I learned about some unusual aspect of firearms history. In this segment, I'll try to answer both of those questions, as well as provide resources for those who would like to expand their knowledge in these subjects. First off, I've been studying firearms and firearms history for over 30 years. Not in any professional capacity, but as a hobby. It's a topic that's always fascinated me. For most of that time, my references were print sources, and to a large degree they still are. I've asked Aaron and Weird to share a photo of one of my shelves of reference books. The left-hand side is taken up almost entirely by a nearly complete set of shooter's Bibles dating back to the 1930s. The right-hand side is more eclectic, with the bottom shelf containing a number of old issues of American Rifleman magazine, some dating back to the 1920s. Note, this picture does not include my reloading books or most of my books on gunsmithing. As you can see, I have shelves full of reference material, some of which have been out of print since before I was born. These books are out there and are worth looking for if they fit your interest. In addition, there are new books coming out every year. Case in point, Ian McCollum is releasing a book on the history of French longarms right now. It's called Chassepot to FAMAS, French Military Rifles 1866 to 2016, and will be a must-have for any collector of French rifles. Speaking of Ian McCollum, you may know him better as Gun Jesus from the Forgotten Weapons YouTube channel. Another excellent YouTube channel is See an Arsenal, where Othias and May dive into the history, design, and use of, primarily, World War I firearms, and Mark talks about conservancy and restoration. In fact, the two channels combined their efforts in Project Lightning, which was a study of World War I light machine guns. Even though there are more, these are my current top two media sources for firearm information. While discussion boards and Facebook pages can have some good information, you have to be able to sift it out from the mass of opinions and repeated anecdotes that make up the majority of their content. Since it makes up most of my reference library, let's go back to print. Primary sources are always better. For example, if your interest is U.S. military small arms development, Hatcher's Notebook by General Julian Hatcher is an excellent choice. W.W. Greener's book, The Gun and Its Development, while occasionally self-serving, is another great resource for early firearms development history. If your collection is more specific, you may want books that focus on a certain brand or period. I have a particular fondness for Smith & Wesson revolvers, so I have a copy of the standard catalog of Smith & Wesson by Jim Supica and Richard Nahas. I also have a companion book for Colt firearms by Rick Sapp. These are excellent books for identifying your particular firearm, but less so for determining value. While these books have had several editions, they're not published frequently enough to be up to date in that regard. If you want to figure out values, the best option at this time are the Blue Book of Gun Values or final sale prices from closed online auctions. A few things to keep in mind with these sources. A new edition of the Blue Book is released every year, usually in April. Make sure you have the newest printing for the most up-to-date information. There are also regional variations in values that the book simply cannot attempt to list. With the auction sites, you'll sometimes see an excellent example of a firearm go for a surprisingly low price, and the very next week, a mediocre example go for a shockingly high price. Welcome to the vagaries of online auctions. My primary resource for Colt semi-automatic pistol development is Colt Automatic Pistols by Donald Beatty. In regards to the AR platform, nothing comes close to the Black Rifle by Blake Stevens and Edward Ezell. On a related note, Small Arms of the World and Handguns of the World by Ezell, while, as far as I know, currently out of print, are must-haves for those interested in the development of military small arms. I was also lucky enough to come across an early edition of Six Guns by Elmer Keith. Pretty much anything by Ian Hogg, no relation to David Hogg, is worth adding to your library. There are many more books in my reference library, but I think you get the idea. And I didn't even get into the books on gunsmithing, ammunition development and manufacturing, or political resources. Of course, once you've added these books to your reference library, it's really important to read them, sometimes more than once. I've asked our host to put links to some of these books in the show notes. That about wraps up this segment. If you have any questions for me or suggestions for future segments or comments on an existing segment, please post them on the Assorted Calibers Podcast Facebook page and Aaron or Weird will make sure I get them. That's all for now. Thanks for listening. I'm David, and this is Gun Lovers and Other Strangers.
So, Aaron, I don't know about you, but I was very surprised that when he talked about how did he get so knowledgeable about classic firearms, at no point did he mention handgun radio on the Firearms Radio Network.
Yeah, I'm not touching that.
I'm deeply offended.
What, that I'm not touching it?
No. I'm offended that you're not committing to my bit.
All right, I'm sorry, Weird. I'll touch your bit.
Oh, God.
Wow, really? I hadn't even thought of that, but you're absolutely right. Oh, my God. David, how could you not talk about handgun radio? I mean, especially since Weird, who is the host of this podcast, is also host of Handgun Radio. I mean, you have just so totally gaffed. I think that you're going to need to have an extreme apology or else you are going to end up getting kicked off of this podcast. Isn't that right, Weird?
I'm sorry.
You wanted your bit touched. I touched it good and hard.
Oh, that was awesome. But yeah, everyone go check out the show notes because, yeah, there's a whole lot of book stuff to look at there and get your gun nerd on. Because, oh boy. So to close out the show, one of my biggest fans is my daughter. She asks to listen to ACP on car rides, and sometimes we're just chilling out around the house. And she's been talking about doing a segment for the show for a while now. And today we finally sat down and did it. Hello, all. In the nature of ACP being a family-friendly show, I thought maybe we'd have something for all ages, and since my daughter listens to the show, she's been wanting to be on for a while, and so here she is.
My name is Loveball.
And what do you want to talk about today?
Arts for Kids Hub.
That's right, so tell everybody what Arts for Kids Hub is.
It's a family who helps you draw. And they have videos that you tap on, and then they start the video, and some of them are live, and some of them you can fast forward, or you, so they go fast on the ones that they aren't live, and you can pause and copy the drawing, or use the same, or use the same colors, or do different colors and color it the way you want. But I like to do it because there are so many drawings that I don't know, and you can do if you know how to do, like, horses or unicorns or, like, all those things, or, like, Pegasus or any drawing that you don't know, you can practice drawing with them.
And what's your favorite thing to draw?
The unicorn and the Pegasus.
Well, that's awesome. And so these guys are available on YouTube. They have a YouTube channel that's free for all, but they also now just launched an app for Android and Apple products, which is, I believe, for pay. My wife took care of that. But it is ad-free and a little bit easier for small kids to interface. Do you use the app all by yourself? Or do you need mommy and daddy to help you?
I don't think I need.
No, you just open up your tablet and do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you get to learn to draw. And I'll tell you, her drawing has gotten a whole lot better. Hasn't your drawing gotten better?
Yes.
All right. Well, there is our kid product endorsement for this episode of ACP.
Okay. So what was that name she went by? Love Bug?
Love Ball.
Okay. Well, that's actually what I thought she said, but it didn't make any sense. Why? Is she, like, super cuddly? She's a ball of love?
She is super cuddly, and she is a ball of love, but also she is deeply amused by Oddball's nom de plume. And so she wanted to have some sort of variation of Oddball. She's like, Oddball, it's a funny name. It's odd. I mean, never mind the fact that her daddy goes by Weirdbeard, and she knows this.
Well, your dad, so you're lame. Is that it?
Yeah, kind of. I think also, I mean, for those that are, like, longtime fans, I mean, you heard my daughter. She did a segment on her love of the Captain Underpants books back in the Gunblog Variety Cast days. So she's been listening to Daddy on podcasts for a long time. I think the whole, like, yeah, Daddy sometimes goes by Weirdbeard. It's no longer even exciting or interesting, but I think she just recently discovered that Oddball's a person. I think I was telling her a story of something horrible that he did at NRA annual meeting. And she was laughing about that. So she's like, Oddball. So, and she was also making a point of the Oddball's going to hear my segment, isn't he? And I'm like, yes, he is, sweetie. She may have a crush on Oddball.
Oh, that's so cute. You know, it's too bad that we aren't likely to have any NRA meetings up where you live.
That's a good thing.
It would, well, probably, but yeah. Just, it would be absolutely adorable if we could have Oddball and your daughter on, mm-hmm. and just, you know, Oddball and his sidekick, Loveball, and just see what happens. I bet that'd be adorable.
Yeah, it'd probably be pretty cute. They could talk about martial arts. They could talk about knives. She could do some drawing.
I think he's pretty good with kids. I mean, I don't know if he's done anything with kids as young as she is, but, yeah. You know, he teaches martial arts to school-age kids,
yep.
So he's probably got some degree of knowledge of how to talk to little people.
Yeah, she also hangs out with me, so she does well with adults. And also, for those who know, I ended up looking it up after we did that, because honestly speaking, we sat down. I was actually downstairs. She was watching a video on her tablet and just doing her own thing. She didn't want to deal with me. She wanted some space. So I said, cool, well, while we're doing that, I'm going to go edit Oddball segment for the show. And so I was just doing my normal, you know, podcast voodoo on Oddball segment. And then she comes downstairs. She says, oh, yeah, I want to do a segment. I'm like, cool, what are we going to do it about? And we talked for a little while. She had a few ideas that, like, I could do Captain Underpants again. I'm like, you haven't read a Captain Underpants book in a little while. I think that ship has sailed. And then she suddenly said, oh, I want to do Arts for Kids Hub. I'm like, you know what? That's a really good idea. And so I didn't have all the information. And so actually, in fact, you can sign up for a full year on that for, I think, $35. So it's actually really affordable.
Wow.
So, and again, super useful as a way also just to get it so that your kids aren't watching the ads and they're not dealing with like YouTube where it's popping up all the suggested stuff. And they might find, you might say, all right, cool. You can do as much art for Kids Hub as you can. I mean, they're from Utah. I don't know if they're Mormon or not, but they've definitely got that Utah wholesomeness about them. That it's one of those things of the, oh no, I'm going to go do the dishes. You just draw. I am not concerned about monitoring them. I've watched enough to go, you know what? This is totally fine. But with YouTube, next thing you know, then you're suddenly watching some horrible stuff, which mostly involves grown-ups playing with toys. Ugh, I do not get that stuff. Those that don't have kids, be thankful that you're not aware of this.
I have no idea what you're talking about, and I think I'm probably better off for it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, there is a whole thing of, I think I heard something about the idea of it was playing towards whatever YouTube algorithm at the time was. That was the thing that made, like, the most money. So people with, like, grown adults with time to kill were literally go to, like, toy stores and buy the latest and greatest toys so they'd show up on search features. And unbox them, because that's a big thing. And then they would play with the toys for a little bit. And they do it for a while. These were like half hour, 45 minute videos. And it almost always, it would just be grown up hands playing with toys.
Okay.
And there'd be like a gazillion ads sprinkled all throughout it. It's the worst content for a child to watch.
Huh.
I mean, besides, you know, pornography or violent movies.
So I have to ask, what did your daughter think of the rough cut, specifically when I edited in the Southern swears?
I actually don't know if we definitely listened to the rough cut, and she listened to some of it, but she's small, so she doesn't necessarily always listen to a whole show at a time. Sometimes she just wants to hear a little bit of it. So I don't think we actually got down to any of the swears cut in. So yeah, that's so I didn't get that reaction if she would miss it. And also sometimes she doesn't hang on to every single word either, which is good because, you know, I listen to whatever music I feel like in the house. And so no, I don't listen to Gigi Allen and the Murder Junkies when I'm home with my daughter. But if there's a couple of potty words in something, then it's okay.
All right.
And she knows about potty words and knows that you don't repeat them. So thanks to each and every one of our listeners, and a very special thanks to all our supporters on Patreon. To become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/assortedcaliberspodcast to sign up. Patrons get an early release of the podcast, plus bonus content like the hilarious blooper reels, the ACP film tracks, and the ACP mag dump. You can get more from me at my blog, which is weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com. And hear me weekly on Handgun Radio on the Firearms Radio Network.
Just go to facebook.com/Aaron.Palette, and that's where I post everything anyway. I mean, you know who I am. This is just part of the routine at this point.
She's a big deal. And thanks to Nate Spencer for our music.
He's got a bit, and he demands I touch it. But I am a refined and genteel lady. Our manners are most definitely assorted. And so's our podcast. Good night, everybody.
Good night. You're literally killing me, Aaron.